Welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe. On today's show, Finn Ross heads out of Edinburgh and into East Lothian. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Ewan Spence here introducing another Edinburgh Fringe show as we give you a flavour of the largest arts festival on the world. Finn Ross Russell joins us once more to look at the theatre side of things. And today he's going to be talking to writer-director Shelley Midler about her new play, The Colley's Shed. It's based around East Lothian's mining heritage. It's very, very close to Edinburgh, the effects of the pit closures on the local communities across the country, and the eerie parallels that those closures can be seen in today's political landscape. What was once past is now current. What is current may well be the future. Everything comes around again. It's all in The Colley's Shed. But to give you that flavour of the show, which is what we like to do here, a little taster, if you're in Edinburgh, something for you to consider going to see. If you're outside of Edinburgh, something for you to watch out in the local theatres, or maybe get in touch with the company and see if you can find out more. EdinburghFringe.thepodcastcorner.com will have all the links into the box office and into The Colley's Shed and to Shelley's own social media so you can keep following her. So you can follow them online. But for now, over to Finn Ross and Shelley Midler.
Finn Ross Russell here, and I'm joined by Shelley Midler, director, writer, creator extraordinaire of The Colley's Shed. How are you, Shelley?
Hello, I'm very well. How are you?
I'm all right. We are talking in the build-up to the start of your exciting Edinburgh adventure. How are you feeling about it?
You know what? It is really exciting, and I've got to kind of put the stress to one side because, yeah, it's a lot, but I'm so excited about it. I'm really, really excited, yeah. I don't know a better word to say.
Well, tell us about The Colley's Shed.
Yeah, so The Colley's Shed is based in the county of East Lothian, which is just outside Edinburgh. And it's based in a local men's shed where four retired miners kind of come together. That's where they spend their time together, and they sort of hash out all of their differences from about 40 odd years ago when a character called Glenn kind of comes into the mix and sort of throws everything up in the air. So we follow them, and then we kind of look back into their past to see how the effects of the mining strikes affected them then, and then we sort of come back into the future to see how it affects them then. So it's really kind of like a good working class story about resilience and the injustices that are sort of still felt today, really.
You mentioned the East Lothian aspect of the story. This festival is happening in Edinburgh, and Edinburgh is quite important to a lot of people who live in East Lothian and also vice versa. Yeah. And yet, it almost feels like East Lothian isn't an area that's really kind of celebrated and talked about much, not just on the Fringe Festival scale, but also on the kind of the rest of the year perspective. Is there a special importance of telling an East Lothian story at the big, massive global Edinburgh Fringe Festival?
I think so, absolutely. I think it's a big county. I think people forget that, but there's so many different like small towns and villages that are quite different in a sense. You know, you've got like Haddington and North Berwick that have definitely seen this surge of Edinburgh residents going and sort of moving and living there, and then you have places like Preston Pans or Trinette that kind of have missed those residents moving. So there is different different aspects to each town, I think, but overall it's a working class community that's like steeped in mining history, and there's so much stories to tell. I mean, even in that one county, you have the city of Edinburgh on one side, you have the seaside on the other, and then you've got a whole bunch of hills and greenery. It's, you know, you go from one aspect to the other just from like a 30-minute drive. So there's a whole bunch of stories and I suppose influences that come from the county, and I think it's really important considering that we're just on the doorstep of Edinburgh, that we do tell those stories.
For those people listening who maybe don't have the historical context of what happened during that 1980s period when the play is, well, when half of the play is set. Yeah. What was the effect that those closures and those strikes ultimately ended up having on these communities?
Well, ultimately it was, I suppose, the death of these communities, really, because almost every single person, every resident in whatever community you were in, whether it was in Scotland, whether it was in Wales or even Northern England, the closure of all these heavy industries meant that everyone was unemployed. And, you know, if they went from, like, the mines, then they would go to the steel works, and then the steel works would be shut down, and then they would go to, like, the car manufacturers, and then that would be shut down. It essentially killed the community, because where are they getting the jobs? Where are they getting the money to provide for their families? So it's affected everyone. And even, I mean, we're talking, it's about 38 years since the 1984 strikes, but there was the strikes in the 70s as well. So this is the period where you're talking, we're nearly 40 years on, and we're still feeling the effects because, I mean, in any sort of mining community, a lot of the houses are still there. A lot of like mining halls, mining clubs, the things, they're still there from that time, and we still have them here. So it's, although it's kind of affected them at the time, like now, you can still feel the history and you still feel the effects of it to this day, because a lot of these communities haven't recovered. They're still working class, they're still lower class. The poverty line is probably a lot more closer to them than anywhere else.
And what's really fascinating is that at the same time that that's going on, we're seeing politically so many different parallels between the Thatcherist era and the era we have today in terms of greater efforts to kind of break down the unions in various different sectors, in terms of several years of Conservative Party rule. Was that something that you were conscious of when you sat down and said, I'm going to write this play? Or was it something that you kind of midway through realised, oh yeah, this is kind of similar to what we're experiencing?
Yeah, it was definitely midway through, because at the time I didn't, like when I was starting to write it, it wasn't necessarily about the mining, it was more about let's build a story that's in a men's shed. And then I sort of like put together the points of, oh, I'm in a mining community, I've got this history on my doorstep, let's put these things together. And then starting to develop the parallels, as you say, it was really intriguing. And even now, I mean, although we've had like Boris Johnson and he's just quit, but you have people like Liz Truss that's in the Conservative leadership race that's literally admitted to being a Thatcherite, dresses like Maggie Thatcher did. So yeah, like there's, it's just so, like you can't ignore the parallels. You can't ignore that we're in the same position that we were in back then, and nothing seems to have been learned. That's what it seems like anyway when you look at it from the perspective of this sort of writing a play in this aspect.
So given that we are in the midst of one of those parallels and we are looking in a situation where history is kind of repeating itself, what can we do to break those trends? I mean, obviously you could say vote, and that's a whole political side of the conversation, but assuming that we have until 2024 before the next election comes around and people can really make a proper stand on this sort of issue, what can people do now in order to support people in these communities and people who are in similar situations to the ones your characters are in?
I think if anything, it's just listening to them. You know, we have to learn the history of what these people have went through, and, you know, even if it's like coming to see a show like this, or even just reading a book on it, or, you know, looking at past news stories or whatever, just listening to what happened to then sort of see, oh, well, actually I can sort of see a similarity in this. Or, and even just, I think the community spirit that people sort of had in lockdown, now that everything's sort of opened up again, it feels like we've lost that. And I think we could gain that back just by speaking to our neighbours or supporting each other in that aspect. If you can, I mean, I know the cost of living is a massive crisis, but if you can, donate something to your food bank, volunteer to your food bank, just help the people around you. I think that's the biggest thing.
Now, the other thing that I absolutely love about this play is it explores the same characters in two different time periods, which obviously means working with two completely different sets of actors in order to not only tell this story, but simultaneously develop these characters. What's that been like?
It's really interesting, actually. And, you know, I don't want to put it down to my penmanship, but, but when you look at them separately as two separate groups, how one character, one actor, sorry, takes on the character of Billy, and then how the other actor takes on him as the older Billy, is very similar. Their energies and the way that all kind of eight actors have taken on each character has been really similar, and I suppose I've kind of lucked out in a sense in doing this. But yeah, it's really intriguing, and I suppose you see as well from like how they were back then to then how they are now, how maybe some people have changed, maybe how they haven't changed, and it's just yeah, really interesting when you put them all in a room together and actually see how they are amongst each other. It's really strange, but I suppose that's, maybe it is down to my penmanship.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, whether it's a penmanship thing or whether it's a directorial thing, did you do anything specific to kind of initiate the process of helping those actors to build the characters together? Or did you just kind of put it down to the faith of, you guys are in the room, you guys know what you're doing here.
Yeah.
I trust you guys to get on with it.
I mean, it was a bit of both. I think because I was very conscious of the fact that I was not only the director, but I was the writer. And I was very conscious of that to try and not be like, oh, this is my perspective as the writer, and sort of allowed them as actors to come into the room with their own perspectives and with their own sort of like, because they all kind of came with some sort of character development that they'd done before we started rehearsals. So I was conscious of not really interrupting that process that they did too much. But also at the same time, I think the beauty of having the script with the younger and older versions is that the older versions have like a bit of history from reading Act Two and how those younger characters have like went through what they've went through. They have that to go off, and then vice versa, the younger guys have the older guys and things. So I think it's been a mixture of what I've done as a writer, but then also working together as a group.
Brilliant. And where can people come and see it?
Yes, so they can see it on the Space UK Northbridge, Venue 36, Perth Theatre. That's a mouthful. But it's on from the 15th to the 27th, so we're on for 2 weeks, which is really exciting. Hopefully everybody can come along.
What time?
So the first week, 15th to the 20th, is 10 past 12, and then the 21st to the 27th in the second week is 8:35 p.m.
Shelley Midler, amazing director-writer of The College Shed, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Shelley Midler there from the play The Collie's Shed. EdinburghFringe.thepodcastcore.com, straight into the website. If only they had an app. Or you can attempt to navigate the official website yourself, edfringe.com, but probably recommend going through us as well. And social media links out to Shelley's presence online as well. Okay, we're going back into the fray. Maybe walk down the Royal Mile to see what's going on. A look around Bristol Square are all the flyers, heading further afield to the likes of Summerside in one direction, the New Town and the Stand in the other direction. Edinburgh taken over by the Fringe. And we'll give you a little snapshot of what we see. It's your Edinburgh Fringe Show. I'm Ewan Spence. Catch you in the next podcast tomorrow. Ta-ra for now. You've been listening to the Edinburgh Fringe Show, hosted by Ewan Spence and Finn Ross Russell, produced by The Podcast Corner. Listen to more from The Fringe at edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com.